Listener discretion is advised because this is not for the politically faint at heart. Tell Lottie Dottie and everybody if you're not for the liberation of the people, fall back. Find past episodes on Player FM, iTunes Podcast, and Google Play Music. On your station for jazz and justice, WPFW, Washington.
Good morning, Washington, D.C. This is Works in Progress. I'm your host, Andy Shalal. And it's a great day out there, the first snow of the season. It's very pretty when you woke up early this morning. You see it on the cars, but not much on the streets. And schools are open here in D.C. as normal. There's lots of going on, of course, in the news. Everybody's focusing on the impeachment, I think, at some level, understanding that This is historic. It's the third president in the history of this country to be impeached. And that looks like it's going to happen through the House, and then it's going to be sent to the Senate for the trial. It doesn't look like a whole lot is going to happen there, although I understand that Chuck Schumer and McConnell are trying to make a deal somehow to allow some testimony to come before the Senate. It's really quite interesting to see the all the machinations that have taken place to get there. I know that Speaker Pelosi has been criticized by many about the idea of a narrow impeachment. There are so many other things you can impeach this guy on: the emoluments clause, obstruction of justice, you name it. Everything that you can possibly throw at someone, he has done. The misogyny, the sexism, the racism, on and on and on. And yet we kind of stayed within a very narrow lane. And some people argue that that may not be the best option, that we should have gone actually further and done a much wider impeachment hearing as opposed to narrowing it down. But, you know, some legal experts might think otherwise, thinking, you know, keep it tight, keep it small, and keep it attainable is probably the best approach. So that's an interesting conversation. We're going to open the phones a little bit later. We would like you to call if you're interested in joining this conversation, 202-588-0893. And we'll be talking about various things. We have also with us today in the studio Emily Gunston. She's Deputy Legal Director for Criminal Legal System Reform at the Washington Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights and Urban Affairs. We'll be talking about fare evasion and turnstile jumping, as some people may know it, and talk about what's happening here in D.C. and all the changes that are taking place around that issue. We'll be talking to her in just a moment. Also, what has piqued my interest was a conservative group successfully petitioned Hallmark, this station, the Hallmark cable station, to pull out an ad for a gay wedding planning service called Zola. And it shows a lesbian couple kissing at a wedding ceremony. Some effort by conservative groups went after Hallmark, and Hallmark pulled out the ad. And then shortly thereafter, lots of other groups, of course, including presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg, went after Hallmark, saying this is unacceptable, and they should put the bad bets on and back on. And now they're actually calling back Zola and saying, "Hey, come back, we'll put the ad back on." So I'm always curious about these types of conversations that happen in corporate boardrooms to see who makes a decision at first and then who retracts that decision later. I know these are interesting conversations that must happen behind the scenes that create those types of dynamics. That's a curious thing. But there's also, of course, lots more in the news. I know that there's a whole bunch of conversations that are happening here in the city about what's happening in town on various subjects and various issues. I know the city council has been taking up lots of new legislation, including labor legislation and others. And we definitely will be talking a lot more about this issue with the the fair evasion and the changes that have taken place in that area. We're going to take a really short break and again remind our listeners 202-588-0893. We'll take a very short break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Emily Gunston from the Washington Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. We'll be right back. And we are back with Works in Progress. I'm your host, Andy Shalal. And with me here in the studio is Emily Gunston. As I mentioned before, she's Deputy Legal Director for Criminal Legal System Reform at the Washington Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights and Urban Affairs. Welcome to Works in Progress, Emily.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you here. I know that you've been involved heavily in this whole thing of fair evasion and what's happening as far as legislation in that arena. According to a recent report put out by the Washington Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, Metro Police stopped more than 30,000 people for suspected fair evasion between January 2016 and February 2018 and issued more than 20,000 citations for fair evasion. The number of people who were given citations more than doubled between 2016 and 2017. 91% of these citations were issued to black people, mostly black men, but kids as young as 7 years old have been cited. Metro Police targeted stops heavily used by youth of color, with 15% of all stops in and around Gallery Place and 14% in and around Anacostia, the Anacostia station. These are pretty intense figures. I know that we talked a little bit about that earlier. First of all, explain to our listeners, when you say fair evasion, what exactly do you mean?
Sure. So fair evasion means getting on the metro, either the bus or the metro rail, without paying for it. There's a number of ways in which that happens. We've recently learned that when the Metro Transit Police and when WMATA makes public presentations about the number of people who are evading the fare, they're including in that people who are not criminally evading the fare. They're including in that anybody who gets on without paying, either because their card didn't work or students who don't yet have their card. But when we talk about the tickets for fare evasion, what was happening there is when the Metro Transit Police saw someone get on the metro or the bus without paying the fare, apparently intentionally, they would stop the person and, in many instances, give them a ticket for having evaded the fare.
And the ticket would be a citation. Like I know that there has been a change, thanks to your organization and yourself, for going before the city council and engaging Councilmember Charles Allen and others in this conversation. But I know it carried a criminal. It was a criminal citation. Is that correct?
That's right. It was a criminal citation. What Metro Transit Police says is that they arrested very few people for fare evasion. We don't know how many people they arrested only for fare evasion. We've asked for those numbers many different ways and never really gotten an answer to the question. What we know is how many people got tickets for fare evasion. It's a criminal ticket, carries with it a fine. But the problem is, if the person doesn't pay the fine, a warrant issues for their arrest.
So how much is the fine?
They say that typically the first offense, somebody would get a $50 fine. We don't have any way to verify that, but that's what the Metro Transit Police say.
What do you mean you don't know how to verify that? You can't get a copy of a ticket that has the amount that you need to pay?
I suppose we might be able to if we did a public information request for every single ticket that was issued, but we haven't looked at that data. We haven't done that.
So somebody gets a $50 ticket, they don't pay it, and suddenly they're in the in the criminal system, basically.
That's right. That's right. There's a warrant.
There's
and
a warrant out for their arrest.
That's right. And the next time they have a law enforcement contact, they could get arrested. Now, it's the Attorney General's office that's responsible for prosecuting fare evasion. They have said they do not prosecute fare evasion. We don't have any reason to doubt that. And so that calls into question even more the purpose for these arrests. Somebody then has an arrest on the record. They sometimes have to spend a couple of days in jail before they get to see a judge and find out that the Attorney General's office didn't even file charges against them. We think that some of the reason why people are actually getting stopped for fare evasion is so that the police can search them. And in fact, the Metro Transit Police in WMATA have been plain about the fact that they wanted this to remain a criminal offense so they could stop and search people.
And what are they looking for?
I don't know what they're looking for. They're largely stopping and searching black men, as the data showed. And what they have said when they've talked about why it's important for fare evasion to remain a criminal offense is that there's a few people that they've stopped that when they stopped that person, they found a weapon or turned out they had a warrant out for a serious offense. So that's what's commonly referred to as broken windows policing, stopping huge numbers of people to find a couple of people who might have committed a serious offense. That style of policing is not effective, and it alienates communities, particularly communities of color, when 91% of the people who are stopped are African American.
This was a big New York thing, the whole broken window idea. Can you explain that to our listeners, what that means, the broken window policing?
Sure. The general theory, it was pioneered in New York City by Bill Bratton when he was the chief of police, that if you stop people for low-level quality of life offenses, you will be able to stop the larger crimes by catching people. The people who committed low-level offenses might be people who would otherwise commit a serious crime. What we saw in New York City is that that did not actually decrease crime. Crime has decreased all over the country for lots of reasons. There's no evidence that broken windows policing actually decreased crime, but there is evidence that lots of people were stopped. It was found to be a violation of the Equal Protection Clause. There were people who were stopped. I think the named plaintiff in that case had been stopped 30 times by the police.
Wow. And it was under Giuliani, wasn't it?
That's right.
This happened. And he actually sort of was catapulted to a very high level. He was touting his statistics everywhere in the country and seen as a model city for stopping or reducing the amount of crime. But no one really bothered to check that this was actually due to the economy changing and people were not reverting to crime who need to make a living somehow or be able to get something and that's when crime was rising before that.
That's right.
It's fascinating to see. There's a good book on Freakonomics that actually speaks about that, which is quite interesting. So when you talk about the police and who does the citations, these police are not the Metropolitan Police Department, correct?
That's right. It can be a little bit confusing. The police that work for WMATA is called the Metro Transit Police Department, whereas the Washington, D.C. Police Department is the Metropolitan Police Department. It's WMATA's police.
And they carry weapons?
They do carry weapons.
Like regular police.
That's right. They are regular police.
Uh-huh.
I think one thing that's important to know about them, though, is they don't have the oversight that the Metropolitan Police Department has. We've, as a community, put in all kinds of measures to try to gain oversight over the Metropolitan Police Department. And the chief, of course, is answerable to the mayor. WMATA was created as part of an interstate compact, and the Metro Transit Police are part of that. And so there's lots of ways in which that decreases transparency to the police department. The chief of police is not answerable to any public agency. The city council in D.C. doesn't have any real way to make changes associated with the Metro Transit Police. All three jurisdictions, D.C., Virginia, and Maryland, and then Congress would need to approve any oversight measures. So that makes it much more difficult to have any kind of democratic input into how that police department's operating.
So these people are from Maryland, D.C., and Virginia because the Metro crosses all these jurisdictions. And there's a chief of Metropolitan Police?
Of the Metro Transit Police, yes.
And who is this person?
You know, I'm sorry, his name escapes me.
So he's not Newsham, obviously.
That's correct.
This person, he or she, are the ones that, and you said that they're not answerable to a specific jurisdiction.
That's right.
So that's a little confusing. I mean, these are police that have guns, that have power to control and power to arrest.
That's right.
And yet there's no oversight?
There's no real, I would argue that there's no real oversight. Included in the compact is a public records request provision mm-hmm. that it allowed us to get the data that we got for the report that we issued about fare evasion. There's no civilian oversight body. It's difficult to sue them because they have 11th Amendment immunity. I know that's sort of confusing legalistic terms, but it means that you can sue individual officers, but it's nearly impossible to sue the police department itself.
Mm. And so what brought about this whole conversation on fare evasion? I imagine the fare evasion has been going on for many, many, many years, ever since Metro started. And in some jurisdictions, people jump over. Other jurisdictions, people just kind of tag along with somebody that's walking in and they, you know, stay tight and they can get in. Other times, people may forget, you know, if you're, and so this applies to the buses as well as the Metro,
that's
correct?
Right.
I mean, I've gotten on the bus and put a certain amount of money because I'm not sure how much I'm supposed to put, and I just walk right in, and nobody stops me. I'm just trying to figure out how did this rise to this level? I know I was reading that there are $40 million that is supposed to be lost due to fare evasion by Metro. Correct?
That's what Metro says. It's hard. We have tried to get to the bottom of how they're calculating that, how they figure out how many people get on the bus and don't pay. I've tried to figure that out because I myself have gotten on the bus and didn't realize there wasn't money on my card and tried to swipe it and I didn't have any cash and the bus driver told me I could just sit down. I've also gotten on the bus lots of times and the place where you swipe your card is covered because it's not working. And so everybody who's getting on that bus that day is not paying. I don't know whether or not those are included in the numbers. We've tried several times to ask how they're calculating these numbers, and each time we've gotten a response that didn't include any data. What Chief Pavlik recently told us at the City Council is that definitely included in those numbers were the 15,000 students who had not yet gotten their Kids Ride Free cards. So it's hard to know how much that's contributing to the amount of revenue lost on Metro, but it seems like it would be a lot, 15,000 kids riding twice a day.
Yeah, absolutely. When we're talking about these arrests, some of them get violent, right? I mean, I think, you know, anyone who's going to be stopped may resist, and that ends up to cause, a number of things that could happen. Can they tase people? Do they tase people?
They have tased people. And previously you asked how this started rising to the surface of why this was becoming an issue. There was a number of incidents where the Metro Transit Police had used extraordinary force against people, where the stop had started as a result of fare evasion. In any given case, it's hard to know exactly what happened there, but we certainly know about the case of Diamond Rust, who was on the bus with her children.
Mm-hmm.
And the police accused her of evading the fare and ultimately ended up using extraordinary force against her. There are pictures of her with serious injuries to her face in front of her children over fare evasion. There also was a gentleman on the Metro who had seen the police interacting with some young men. He went up to intervene to try to see what was happening, and he ended up getting tased by the Metro Transit Police.
Yeah, this is Tapuia Masonza. He was tased on the U Street Metro station when he tried to intercede on behalf of a 13-year-old who was being handcuffed. And for Diamond Rush, she ended up having broken teeth and a knee injury.
That's right.
So that's really pretty serious in front of her children,
which is
quite shocking, frankly. So you said there's a lack of oversight, but I think we found out that the chief is Chief Pavlik. Is the chief of the Metro Police. If there's a problem, where do you go? Do you go to D.C.? Is the D.C. Attorney General responsible? Is the Virginia? Is the Maryland one? How do you resolve this? Who are you dealing with?
So it depends what you mean by a problem. We haven't been able to really get anybody to be particularly responsive to us except through except through public information requests. The chief Pavlik reports to WMATA. He does not report to the mayor of D.C. He doesn't report to Maryland or Virginia. He reports to WMATA.
Uh-huh. So that's quite alarming because that leaves so much, stuff. I mean, we have citizens, we have D.C. citizens, of course, and the the mayor and the attorney general are responsible for their citizens. They may not be responsible for Maryland or Virginia citizens or residents, I ought to say. But it seems like it's a very odd situation that's happened. Is there an effort to change that structure?
There is an effort to change that structure. There's currently a petition going around to change the compact. What would need to happen in order to make the agency, for example, an agency that we could sue, is in the compact, they would need to waive 11th Amendment immunity. There's also additional changes that could be made to the compact, but for each of those changes, Maryland, Virginia, and D.C. would need to agree on the wording, and then Congress would need to approve it.
So how prevalent is this in other jurisdictions? In other words, we're here in D.C., we're hearing this. This is rising to a higher level. Thousands of people are being affected by this. Are other cities doing it differently? Do they have better success? I know that there's been some efforts to lower the fare prices, and even some efforts to say we need to have free public transportation. Many people have been advocating for that. Where does that stand?
So cities have done lots of things to try to get a handle on this. One of them is to reduce the fares. Some cities use actual physical barriers that makes it much more physically more difficult to evade the fare. We would argue that this is public transportation. It should be more accessible to the public and that there should be reduced fare or free fare for everyone in the city or for people who are fall below certain income brackets.
So how would that work? You would just issue cards to folks that are of low income? Is that how it's done?
There's lots of different ways to do it. There's a pilot study going on right now, which you might have read about in the Post, where people are given, I think what they're doing is given cards, and it's reduced fare or free fare. So there's lots of different ways to do it. The way they do it with students is they give them a card that they have to swipe. That's how WMATA, I guess, keeps track of how many people are actually using the system.
It's, you know, the metro is very expensive in D.C., especially if you work during a 9-to-5 kind of hours, Monday through Friday, because those fares go up during the period of time when most riders are riding, which seems ironic because you want people to ride the public transportation system so that they don't clog up the streets. And yet we raise the prices during the time when the streets are most likely to be clogged up. So I'm trying to figure out what are we doing to improve that? Is there an effort to when you say that there's some pilot program that's trying to reduce the prices, is that only in D.C. or is that across all jurisdictions? Do they all have to agree anytime there's such a change?
So I think that is a Washington, D.C. program that they are giving that is at a benefit to folks in the city. I'd also note, in addition to what you've said, is that the further away you live from your destination, the more expensive it is to ride the metro. And as we all know, the city itself is becoming more and more expensive, and people are being pushed farther and farther out. And then the tickets, the fare cost of riding metro rail becomes very, very high. And you know, folks who work for the federal government, that one of the benefits they get is that the metro is free. So it's a shame that folks who are low income are forced to pay such a high fare to ride the metro to get where they need to go.
Yeah, I mean that, and I know that in other countries, for example, like in France and other places, their subway system is heavily subsidized, and to allow more people, a more egalitarian system, to allow more people to be able to ride at low fares to avoid having, first of all, to clog up streets, cause more pollution and more anxiety for folks. And it seems to make a lot of sense. Yet we seem to not have put a handle on this here in this country and in the city. Are there other cities here in the United States that are experimenting with much reduced rates or even free transportation
that you know of? I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that question.
Because I would think that would make a really big difference. I know this is not the issue specifically when we're talking about fare evasion, but if there's no fares, there's nothing to evade, and everybody would be happy. But I know, we're always talking about the metro system being broke, always talking about the need for more funding over and over again. And I know that, the different jurisdictions have fought of who's going to give how much and why and, you know, who's writing more and so on and so on. Are the fare evasion issues specifically a D.C.
issue right now, as opposed to, do they have, in other words, are there problems in Fairfax County? Are there problems in Montgomery County and other places where you have high numbers like we have seen here in D.C. of citations?
So it's hard to know really where the fare evasion is happening. What we know is where they're enforcing it, right? And so I don't think that it's the fact that so many tickets are given in Anacostia, for example, or at Gallery Place is necessarily an indication that that's
so
where more
third,
fare evasion is happening.
A third of all the citations are happening in two stations.
That's right. That's right. So it seems to me that that's where the police are enforcing it, right? So we don't actually know at which stations it's happening the most. We just know where the tickets are given. But I would also note that, before it was decriminalized in D.C., it already was decriminalized either in Virginia or Maryland. I'm sorry that I can't remember which. And WMATA was already saying that they were losing a huge amount of revenue to fare evasion before it was decriminalized. And so what that shows us is criminalization of fare evasion is it does not reduce the amount of fare evasion.
Interesting. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think people think of it as a crime in a normal sense, what a crime would be, right? And when you're giving this citation, does it say this is you've committed a crime or you are accused of committing a crime?
I believe it does.
I mean, is it clear to the person that if they don't pay this, that there'll be a warrant out for their arrest?
I don't think it's clear to the person that if they don't pay it, because I think most people think of it as like a parking ticket.
Yes, exactly.
I don't think people are conscious of the fact that that when it was a criminal offense, that if they didn't pay the ticket, they could end up in jail.
Wow. So what are some of the solutions that you all are coming up with, the Lawyers Guild and the Lawyers Committee and others who are talking about this? I know that some of the council members are deeply involved in this. Carl Racine, of course, is deeply involved in this. What's out there? What are the options out there on the table?
Well, decriminalizing fare evasion was an important first step.
That's already happened.
That's already happened.
In all jurisdictions.
Only in Washington, D.C. And in either Maryland or Virginia, it already was. And I'm sorry that I can't recall whether or not it is still criminal in the other.
So does that mean that if you get a citation in D.C., you would get it's a civil violation.
That's right.
And if you get a citation maybe in another jurisdiction, even though using the same metro system, it would be a criminal violation.
That's right, because it's all based on that state's laws or D.C.'s laws. So the Metro Transit Police are enforcing different laws in each of the three jurisdictions in which they operate.
Well, that's interesting. And yet they have one chief of police. Is that chief of police stationed in Maryland, D.C., or Virginia? I'm not even sure.
I don't know the answer to that question. I have no idea.
And do they respond to Maryland laws or Virginia laws or D.C. laws? We don't know.
Right. They enforce the laws of all three of those jurisdictions in
separately.
That's right.
In
metro facilities.
Interesting. So what are some of the other solutions that we're coming up with? So, of course, the decriminalization is a key and important element of that.
That's right. And I just note that as part of that statute, they also decriminalized eating on the metro, which people may not have realized was a crime prior to that.
You couldn't bring on your latte on the metro?
That's right. You still can't.
Oh, wow.
But now it's a civil offense, whereas it used to be that theoretically you could be arrested for. And there was a famous incident of a young woman who was eating a French fry on the metro.
I remember that very clearly. Yep. Yeah. Don't eat your French fries on the metro.
That's right.
Yep.
So, but another big part of the answer here, as you've mentioned, is making public transportation actually available to the public, particularly people who are low income. So that means either severely reduced fares or free. I think that might be a pipe dream or further down the line, but I think it's what we all should be thinking about. We should be encouraging people to use public transportation. Public transportation should actually be accessible to all of the public.
Absolutely. So trying to get reduced or free public transportation, decriminalizing the issue of fare evasion. What other things you've seen happen that have been effective to try to move this needle forward?
Well, like I said, what some cities use is actual physical barriers to get on the metro, and that seems to have some effect in actually reducing fare evasion.
I see. So I know that in New York, the turnstiles are very different. You can't jump them. They're like, the full length of a human being.
That's right.
So,
and I think the other thing to think about, and this is, in my view, true of fare evasion and so many other things, that maybe the police are not the appropriate response to these sorts of low-level sort of quality of life type incidents.
Yeah. Do you all deal with other kinds of crimes that happen on the metro? Because, you know, the metro can sometimes be a hotbed for those types of things. Have you seen other in other words, is the idea of the fare evasion, stopping fare evasion, is that the broken window idea that you're stopping people early on so that they don't do other crimes because once they get in, they may cause other problems?
That's their theory. I mean, we are very interested to see now that it's being decriminalized, how the Metro Transit Police will enforce this going forward. I have some trepidation that what will happen is they still will stop somebody for fare evasion in order to give them a ticket, but will escalate that situation in such a way that they end up arresting the person for rudeness, right? For if the person is resisting arrest by being rude to the officer in some way, or they end up getting arrested for resisting arrest because they, for example, pull their arm away. That's how these situations escalate. And we don't have any insight into what their policies are or what their training is on de-escalating situations like that.
You're listening to the voice of Emily Gunston. She is an attorney with the Washington Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights and Urban Affairs. And we're talking about fare evasion on the metro and some of the changes that are taking place. We'll be talking a lot more about body cameras and other things that are happening. Also, we'll be talking about ICE. So we're going to take a short break. And we're asking you, our listeners, if you are interested in joining this conversation, we'll be taking some calls at 202-588-0893. Again, 202-588-0893. We're going to take a short break for the social justice calendar, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Joseph Green, and this is your WPFW social justice calendar for the Washington metro area. Monday, December 16th, the Bethesda African Cemetery Coalition will host its second community holiday party. Maceo and friends will provide songs, raise a glass, and celebrate our fight for justice, 7 to 9 p.m. at VFW 8110 Fenton Street, Silver Spring, walkable from Metro. For more information, send email to nofearcoalition@aol.com. Thursday, December 19th, Ukrainian artist and scientist Dr. Olga Zabarskaya will speak at the closing reception of Art Impact International Chroma, international juried art exhibition about Mind Booster Art, 5:30 to 8 p.m. at Pepco Edison Place Gallery, 702 8th Street Northwest. For more information and to register for this free event, visit artimpactinternational.org/chroma or call 202-297-3040. For an online listing of these events, or if you like your social justice event included in the social justice calendar, visit the page ips-dc.org/social-justice-calendar, where you will find submission guidelines. The Social Justice Calendar is a public service brought to you by the Institute for Policy Studies in partnership with WPFW, your station for jazz and justice.
And we are back with Works in Progress, and we are speaking, of course, to Emily Gunston before we went on break. She is an attorney with the Washington Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights and Urban Affairs, and we were talking about fare evasion. I know that some of the issues that have come up was the idea of excessive force. We mentioned that earlier, the excessive force is being used against some of the people that are riding the metro may either, you know, rude to a metro policeman or some other things that may incite the need for the use of force. But are we doing anything to be able to prevent that? I know the body cameras have been a part of the conversation.
So the Metro Transit Police, as far as I know, do not wear body cameras. The Metropolitan Police Department do wear body cameras, which I think can be an important part of accountability if it's used well by the department.
Is there any effort to try to get them to have body cameras?
There's an effort to get any kind of accountability for the Metro Transit Police Department.
What's the resistance? Who's in the way of getting? I mean, most people would agree that having body cameras is a good thing. It has helped in policing. It has helped to hold police accountable. They are being paid by the citizens, by the residents, and they have a huge impact. They have guns. They can kill people. So we have seen over and over again the use of body cameras actually has been very effective in trying to put a check on that. So where's the resistance? I'm just curious.
I don't know the answer to that. I think the issue is
Emily,
is that,
we need answers from you, okay?
I think the problem is that because this police department is not answerable to any public agency, it is very difficult to have any democratic control over this police department. They're just not susceptible to public pressure in the way that a municipal police department would be.
Well, hopefully we will get some phone numbers and other ways for our listeners to be able to be engaged. Let's take a couple of calls. Hello, caller. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, welcome to Works in Progress. Do you have a comment or a question to our guest?
Yeah, my comment, I was listening to Fair Evasion and some of the information that she was given and probably what needs to be done. You know, I mean, I got to tell you, 98% of the people who commit that are people of color. And, you know, it's considered a crime. And at some point, we got to shut it down. You go back 30, 40 years, it was a few people that didn't pay, and the other ones were struggling to pay. But now it's a culture of people just say, well, Metro's not going to do anything, so we can just walk on the bus. And so let me tell you, so in Prince George's County, it's just as bad as D.C. now. There's several routes in Prince George's County where people just don't pay at all. And again, in those communities of color, it's where people are not paying. So
what are you suggesting? Caller?
I'm suggesting that since it's a crime, the mayor supported it. If I remember, the mayor supported it being a crime. So if it's a crime and you're enforcing the crimes, then people at some point, they go to pay. But the way it's going now, you're almost smacking them on the hand, telling them, oh, don't worry about it. They're juveniles. We don't want to get no record. But then it spread. I mean, it's like a cancer. I mean, New York just spent $250 million so that they can hire a 500 police so that they can enforce it. Metro just doesn't want to do that because they think they're going to be looked at. Well, they're people of color, so the politicians are going to come down and say these people can't afford it, blah, 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 blah. I mean, you can't have a system like that.
Well, thank you so much. So the caller is saying, why are you decriminalizing this? This is a crime. If you keep allowing people to do this, more and more people will do it, and suddenly you've got chaos.
I just want to respond by pointing out that there's absolutely no evidence that most of the people who commit this crime are people of color. When you look at data on most crimes, that turns out to not be true. For example, on drug crimes, white people commit that crime at the same or higher rate than people of color. This is a crime, it seems, at times of poverty, and it certainly is true that more people of color are living in poverty in Washington, D.C. So I think it's fair to say that making Metro more accessible, by that I mean free, it may reduce fare evasion. I also think, though, that what these numbers show us is that the Metro Transit Police is enforcing this law in a discriminatory way. I see white people get on the Metro bus every single day, and somebody doesn't have the money, and they don't pay the fare, and I have never seen the police interact with any of those people.
Hmm. All right, let's take another caller. Hello, caller, are you there?
Hello?
Hello, caller. You're on the air?
Oh, I am?
Yes, welcome.
Okay.
Welcome to Works in Progress.
Thank you so much. Really quickly, and then I'll just hang up. I'm just really happy that this topic is being brought up. Earlier this year, my 18-year-old daughter was arrested for fare evasion at the Rockville Metro Station. She was handcuffed and taken to jail for the first time in her life. She was humiliated, and I know for a fact that had she been a young white woman, this never would have happened to her. These types of situations are nothing new in America. It's a sad reality that white supremacy and racism continues to rule this country in ways that it won't stop in my lifetime. And I'll listen to the response off the phone.
Thank you so much, caller. I want to remind other callers, 202 202- 888-588-0893 if you'd like to be part of this conversation. So yes, I think this last caller mentioned the idea of what you've been talking about, the idea that this is disproportionately affecting people of color. And again, here's an 18-year-old black woman who gets handcuffed for not paying the fare, and yet, as the caller mentioned, and as your statistics have shown, that if she was white, that would not happen.
That's right. And it's absolutely outrageous that somebody would be put in handcuffs over fare evasion and end up with an arrest on their record over fare evasion. Like I said, what Metro Transit Police has said over and over again is that they almost never arrest people just for fare evasion. Over and over again, we found that to simply not be true. I also think what happens is what they say that they don't arrest somebody just for fare evasion. I think what's happening is that somebody fails the attitude test with the Metro Transit Police because they're frustrated by the way they're being treated, and they end up in handcuffs. And then the police are able to say, oh, we weren't arresting them for fare evasion. We were arresting them for resisting arrest. The reality of it is the police should be trying to de-escalate situations rather than ending up with a young woman in handcuffs over something as minor as fare evasion.
Have you interceded to try to get better training for the police in order to deal with this specific issue? I know decriminalization is one thing, but as one of the callers mentioned, so if you decriminalize it, people will get the ticket, will forget about it, will keep doing it, and so on. What would stop somebody from doing this regularly? I'm not for fares, period. I'd like to see free metro, but it seems unfair that some people pay and some people don't.
So we don't have any insight into what their training is like. Unlike many other police departments that put all of their policies online, the Metro Transit Police does not put their policies online, and we don't have any insight into their training. I think there's evidence that these police officers are not encouraged to de-escalate situations. It's a really important part of policing in an urban area, is ensuring that when somebody is interacting with the police over something minor, that remains a minor incident. We would encourage certainly for this police department to make their policies public and to engage with the public over how they're training their officers.
This is the voice of Emily Gunston. She is with the Washington Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights and Urban Affairs, and we're talking about fare evasion and decriminalization thereof. If you are a listener, you'd like to join this conversation, it's 202-588-0893. Let's take another caller. Hello, caller. Are you there?
I'm here. Are you talking to me?
Yes, sir. You're on there. Thank you so much for joining
us. Oh, yes, I'm here. My name is Ike. I'm a street musician. And Metro policy is that you cannot play your instrument within 15 feet of an entrance. And there are certain stations, apparently, where part of the station is private property and not actually part of the Metro. And there are people playing there, but other places I can't play. And I don't know where I can play and where I can't play. But I think 15 feet from the entrance is too far away. And I think that should be public space. Not to mention the fact that maybe we should be allowed to play in some of the stations as long as we're not interfering with flow of people or the necessary announcements that are made.
I know that in some jurisdictions, I know in New York City, for instance, there's always performers at the different metro stops, and it's always so exciting to be able to ride the metro so you can listen to some either great opera or some classical music or some hip-hop or something that's happening in the metro. It livens up the city. I know in this city they've tried to do something like that once in a while, but it is illegal to play music, right, inside?
Yeah, and it's not the same if you hire people to do this once in a while, or once in a while you let somebody do it. I mean, that's a different thing. I've been doing this for 40 years and played in different cities, but this city I can't play in the metro.
What metro station do you play near?
Well, I play actually the Bethesda Metro. Under the Hyatt Hotel, part of that is private property, but there was a time when they would arbitrarily come and tell me I couldn't play there. And so I quit playing there for a couple of years, and then I found out I could. And then there are other people that go down there and play. And, but there are a lot of stations where we can't, where they won't let you do it.
Well, thank you so much, caller. Emily, is playing music on a metro station illegal?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I've never looked into it.
Yep. So it is. I mean, you don't see it very often at all. And when you see it, it's usually part of a day of or something like that where they have music. But I think that would go such a long way to even put people in a different mood. You know, when you walk in, you hear music, it's very different than when you're rushing to get to work and you're pushing people around and so on. So yes, I hope that changes. Maybe you can take that on as another project of the Washington Lawyers Committee. I think we have other callers. Let's take another caller and remind callers that's 202-588-0893 if you'd like to join this conversation. Hello, caller, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Thank you so much. You're on the air.
Yeah.
Any question or comment, please?
I have a comment. I remember when Metro was first starting up and starting up the police force, that they had the ability to stop people within a certain circumference of a bus stop or a Metro station. And I don't think a lot of people were aware of that they were able to do that. And if they're still able to do that, why is not the municipality, why don't they have a part to play in that? Because, I mean, it is, you know, I saw them stopping people on the street and in alleyways and in schools and so on. So I just like to know what if they're able to do that, what are they trying to do about that?
Emily?
So they still are able to stop people within a certain circumference of a bus stop or a Metro station. I don't know exactly what that number is, but they are allowed to do that for crimes that are committed as part of the people being on the Metro or the bus.
So a lot of these things I saw, you know, had nothing to do with Metro stops. So, a lot of them had to do with basic infractions, say driving infractions at you know, with some of the incidents I saw. So what's the take on that?
Is the jurisdiction of the Metro Police go beyond the Metro station? Can they stop somebody for a crime that's happening outside their specific...
I think it gets a little fuzzy, but my understanding is that if it seems to be related to somebody riding on the Metro, so for example, if somebody commits a robbery at a bus stop, that would be within the purview, the jurisdiction of the Metro Transit Police. I don't know how far away you need to be from the bus stop in order for them to make that call. My guess is as it gets further out, it might be a little bit fuzzy who has jurisdiction there. But certainly the Metro Transit Police is allowed to enforce those sorts of laws.
Well, last comment. Sure. I mean, with your statement, because of the closeness and proximity of the Metro stations and the bus stops, I mean, that's giving them a lot of leeway.
Yeah, there's not a lot of feet in between. I get you. Yeah, I think a lot of these things, as we heard from our guest, is a lot of these things are fuzzy, and because there's not a lot of oversight and the jurisdictions are kind of hazy, it's very difficult to get down to the bottom of who and when and how somebody is responsible for these types of issues. And that's really a big concern. I mean, obviously, the most important thing, I think, for any kind of police department is accountability. We've seen that over and over again. And to have a police department that has guns that can arrest you and that can put you in jail without accountability is pretty frightening.
That's exactly right. I mean, if you're a civilian and you've had an interaction with the Metro Transit Police and you want to make a complaint about what they've done, it's totally unclear where you can make that complaint. And then once you've made the complaint, it's totally unclear what happens to that complaint, who's responsible for investigating it, a timeline for investigating it, any response to your complaint about what they're going to do. If you go to the Metropolitan Police Department, the answers to that are clear. There's an Office of Police Complaints. But with the Metro Transit Police, there's no civilian oversight at all of that police department.
And we'll give some information at the end of the show about how people can get involved and get in touch. Let's take another caller right now. Hello, caller, are you there?
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. My name is Nia 2X, and I had the privilege to sit with your guest, Ms. Gunston, at the MTPD hearing or the board with Metro on November of last month, November 12th. And I sat with her in her testimony along with the attorney for the young lady who had her teeth knocked out. And I was representing the National Action Network because we do have 15 to 20 Metro Transit Police Department officers who are sitting with me and our organization making complaints. Now, these are the police officers within who talk about the training, and those were one of my comments I made about the training. In fact, I have reached out to Chief Pavlik three times now, and I've written him a letter. I've called twice. He called one time. He did call one time, said he would call me again. I haven't heard from him yet, but we at NAN are requesting accountability toward the lack of training or how they train the officers to deal with the public, because as your guest is articulating, it's completely unclear. And then when you talk about the WMATA contract, that we the citizens can only sue the officers, we are challenging Chief Pavlik, and we are lining up with others in the community, such as your guest, Attorney Ford, and many others, to have more oversight and to have equitable treatment to the community from the MTPD. It's a wonderful program. And the caller, before I hang up, that is saying that, oh, yeah, it's going on, these poor people are doing this. I completely challenge him, because listening to the officers who do work in Maryland and Virginia, the police officers have a very different alleged statements that they're telling us how they are to ticket it people in areas outside of Gallery Place and Anacostia. It is very interesting. I'd love to have them on your show if you're interested.
Yeah, I would very much be interested. I think this is a very important topic. But I wanted to ask you, Nia2X, what is the name of your organization again, please, and how can people get in touch with you?
Thank you, sir. The Greater D.C. Chapter National Action Network, founded by our great leader, Reverend Al Sharpton. You can call us Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at 202-819-7134. I'll say it again. Thank you. 202-819-7134. So as we continue to sit down with the chief to hear his side of the story, the allegations are unbelievable.
So you're asking for more training of these police officers. Is that your big ask from the police officers at this point, or from the chief?
Actually, we are asking about the training, because the allegations that are coming from police officers to our desk is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. In fact, sir, I'm a retired 30-year police officer myself. Uh-huh. So when I hear how they're training, they are alleging how to treat the community, it is just unthinkable. So I have to sit down with the chief to see if the allegations have any merit before I go out and accuse anybody of something, but I can't get him as of yet to sit down with me. A letter, two calls. He's called me once. I called him twice last week. We'll be calling this week, not in a accusing position, but to sit down and to inquire what has been alleged to us, because it's just unthinkable, and it needs to be heard in the public if it is true of how the training that the police officers are expected to do to the community. Mm-hmm. If it is true, it's criminal. If it's true.
Thank you so much, caller. If you could just repeat your phone number one more time for the National Action Network, please, so the listeners can hear and get in touch with you.
And thank you and your guest, 202-819-7134. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you on the show. So, there's a lot happening. Obviously, there are people out there that are trying to make a difference and make this change.
Yeah, and one of the things that we've recommended, and I know others have recommended, including the ACLU of D.C., is that D.C. set up a community advisory panel of folks who can weigh in on the types of changes that need to be made for the Metro Transit Police and can advise the city on how it should be advocating with Maryland and Virginia and Congress to make changes to the compact.
I know we want to talk a little bit about ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. I know that there was an issue that happened, or one of many, I'm sure, where a young man, from South America, I suspect, by the name Jose Ricardo Villata Canales, who was a tree cutter, and somebody stopped by, one of the an inspector stopped by to check if he has a license to do this, found out he didn't have a license, ended up calling, I guess, some authorities. They arrested him. They looked at his background. They found out that he is undocumented. And then they held him in custody for ICE to show up, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement of Montgomery County. I mean, of the Montgomery County people interceded and had ICE come out there. I know that in D.C. that there's sort of this understanding that the D.C. police do not cooperate with ICE. Is that still true?
That's right. It's the official policy of the Metropolitan Police Department. I also would note that it was the Department of Natural Resources Police that called ICE and not the Montgomery County Police Department.
I see.
Mr.
Got
Villalta.
It. So anyway, I know that the Washington Lawyers Committee is working on those types of issues as well.
That's right.
Before we go, we're actually done and we're out of time. Can you tell people how they can get in touch and get more involved in these issues?
Sure. It's the Washington Lawyers Committee. Our phone number is 212-319-1000.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Emily Gunston. She's an attorney with the Washington Lawyers Committee of Civil Rights and Urban Affairs and deputy legal director there. And we really appreciate you having this conversation on this very important topic, I think, that's not going to go away anytime soon.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And thank you, our listeners and our callers. Until next week, peace.
Among its other benefits, giving liberates the soul of the giver. The words of Dr. Maya Angelou. Thursday, December 26th through Tuesday, December 31st is your last opportunity to make a donation to WPFW for 2019. You can gift the WPFW listening experience by donating during our year-end pledge drive and can visit WPFWFM.org right now to do it. Your financial contribution allows WPFW to be heard by those who need the vital news, music, and perspective the station provides, but aren't able to donate. 89.3 FM is the gift that keeps on giving because of you since 1977. Give to WPFW now and liberate your soul.
The talk show Africa Now airs Wednesdays at 1 p.m. It's a modern view on historical issues concerning the entire African world, addressing how African people are participating in globalization, ways in which the rest of the world continues to exploit African resources, uncovering labor violations by corrupt politicians and Western government powers. Learn what's happening now in interviews with artists, activists, scholars, and a host of other experts each episode. Listen Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Africa Now is also available on iTunes Podcast, Google Play Music, as well as SoundCloud on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW, Washington.
Hello, it's that time of the year again where we're having our 11th annual free Christmas Day dinner. That's WPFW 89.3 FM along with Torres at Wilson's Restaurant at 700 V Street Northwest, directly across the street from Howard University Hospital. The Inner Voices and Your New Beginnings. We're presenting our 11th annual free Christmas Day dinner. from 12 noon to 4 p.m. at Torrey's at Wilson, 700 V Street Northwest. Our free Christmas Day dinner will be broadcast live on WPFW 89.3 FM from 12 noon to 4 p.m. Come out and enjoy a free Christmas. WPFW is heard around the world. We are a United Black Fund member agency. The number to call is 202-526-4138. That's 202-526-4138. We need your help, support, and donations to make sure that our 11th annual free Christmas Day dinner is again another success. Thank you.
No social justice issue or movement can escape the spotlight of the Latino Media Collective. The Latino Media Collective delivers consequential coverage from the biggest countries in South America to the smallest enclaves of Central America and the Caribbean, and is available on SoundCloud, iTunes Podcast, and Google Play Music. The Latino Media Collective is recorded in WPFW Studios and airs Fridays at 1 p.m. on WPFW, Washington.